Okay, so I will call this meeting to order. The Commerce Committee for June 16th, 2020, during the 2021st special session, hopefully only special session. Welcome, everybody. We have two bills on the agenda today and a few testifiers. We don't have minutes to approve because we did that online after our last meeting in regular session. So we are ready to roll with Representative Dabney. That has the first bill on our agenda. And that is House File 133. I will make a motion to re-refer House File 133 to the General Register. Representative Dabney, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Madam Chair, let me thank you for your considerable efforts on this bill and recognizing the needs of my community currently and how you have stepped forward personally as well as professionally to meet those needs. I'm deeply appreciative. As members know, after the murder of George Floyd by members of the Minneapolis Police Department, for several weeks, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and in fact, communities across the country and around the world, protested this callous abuse of police authority. While overwhelmingly protesters, while calling on all levels of Minnesota government to meet their demands for the arrest of the police involved in their prosecution, that we change the way we provide for public safety and confront systemic racism, frustration and rage over another police killing of an unarmed African-American man boiled over. The state failed to provide public safety needs in a timely fashion, and the Twin Cities then became a magnet for individuals and groups bent on disrupting life, doing damage, looting and burning hundreds of buildings in the two central cities and several suburbs. In Minneapolis alone, a preliminary estimate of damages to the real estate values alone exceeds $550 million. To speak to House File 133 more specifically, in short, it was a particularly bad time to be in the liquor store business. Many liquor stores were targets of looting and arson. Some, as those contemplated in this bill, sustained significant damages or are total losses and not currently available for business to be reestablished. As you know, Minnesota liquor licenses are specific. House File 133 allows the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, both of which have several stores that sustained heavy damage or total damage, flexibility in those licenses to allow retailers to reopen at temporary locations while they explore rebuilding or reopening elsewhere permanently. Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Krause is on the call.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. And yes, he is. And I'm just going to make a note for the committee quickly. I moved on to the bill before we took attendance. From my screen, we have our quorum, so everything is in order. But after we finish this testimony, we'll just circle back and make sure that we have it clear that we have our attendance. So, Simon, I'm coming back to you after testifiers.
Representative, Madam Chair, could someone move the bill?
I moved the bill.
You did. I'm sorry, I missed that.
No, okay, that's
thank
okay.
you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for making sure we're doing it all right. Like I said, special session, the coffee wore off. What are we going to do? let's see. Mr. Krause, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Representative Dabney, thank you for sponsoring the legislation. Thank you to all of you for considering it. Let me just share with you a little of my history and our history at that location. This is regarding Minnehaha Lake Wine and Spirits, and we're right at the corner of Lake and Minnehaha, directly across from the third precinct. So our store was destroyed after three nights of looting. My father bought the store 35 years ago, became terminally ill a few years later. That's when I got in the business. I have been operating that business for the past 31 years. My son joined me in the business, Jason, about 5 years ago. And it is our plan, our hope, and intention to rebuild. But that's going to take some time. And having been there over this duration, we've obviously well-established in the neighborhood, and I want to preserve the goodwill so that when we reopen, we still have customers who are accustomed to shopping us. And that is what this legislation would provide, give me an opportunity to open up a temporary location while the new store is being reconstructed. And it is our hope to add some housing above the store, do something mixed use that would provide some additional housing for the community, and make something even better. It's cathartic for us thinking about what can be rather than what has been. And so I really appreciate and value your support regarding this legislation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Jason, is that your name? Or
yes.
Did you have any additional testimony you wanted to add?
Nothing really beyond that. One thing, though, is in addition, with the devastation of our business and so many businesses around us, there's also been a number of people who have been put out of work as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's been one of our primary concerns from the outset, has been our staff. And so we have taken as many efforts as we can to help provide them security in the interim. But passing this bill and allowing us to have a temporary location will also be able to better provide security for them, or, you know, in the event that they are able to find other work, other people in the community, because there's plenty of people in the community who are without work now.
But the temporary store would allow us to mitigate the harm for our employees. I mean, we have continued to keep them on payroll, and we would like to do that for as long as we can. Got a wonderful staff who's been with us for years and years. Mm-hmm. And so this would accomplish that as well.
Thank you. The committee knows this, but I have to say it. I have a special place in my heart for these family-owned liquor businesses. That's how I put myself through college. So I I'm very sorry for the losses that you've suffered.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony. We will take additional testimony, and then if you guys can hang out if any members have questions, does that work for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Members, I just wanted to make a note that in your packets, you should have a letter of support from the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, who have been working closely with their members on this particular issue. And it was possible that Mr. Rose was going to join us and testify. I'm not sure. From a Broadway Liquor Outlet. Let me give you a second. Travis, is Mr. Rose on the call right now? Or
not that I'm aware of, but okay. I think just about everybody that came in was identified, so I'm not sure if they're there or not.
Okay. Well, as I'm sure everybody understands, the community is, you know, all timing and everything is really thrown off. So I understood that Mr. Rose might be here for committee. If not, he was going to submit a letter, which we will distribute to all of you as well. So I don't have any other official testifiers. Is there anybody else from the public who has joined us to testify on this bill? Seeing none and hearing none, we can go to member questions. Members, are there questions? And I'm using a different screen, so if you raise your hand and I don't see you, just unmute yourself and I can recognize you.
Madam Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question, has Liquor Control weighed in on this?
Who would like to answer that question, Representative Gaffney?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, my understanding is that Liquor Control was contacted in the development of the bill and believes that this is an important provision to provide the two central cities the flexibility that they need.
Madam Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Representative Gaffney, I'm supportive of your efforts here. I just want to make sure that we don't get down the road and there was another parallel universe that we didn't consult here to make sure that we've got what we need to help these businesses that were looted and there's just a lot of bad things that have happened that we just need to take care of, including what happened to the business owners. And so I want to make sure that we're keeping them whole. That's the reason for my questioning.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And I will say, I believe, and all of this moved quite quickly since last Friday. And I believe Travis reached out to the Department of Public Safety. And from what I understand, they were fine with this effort moving forward.
Madam Chair, the only other question I have is the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, their leadership has been consulted. They're comfortable with the this process and in essence, this law being made available to them. Is it permissive or prescriptive or?
Representative O'Driscoll, I can weigh in with what I know, and Representative Dabney can fill in as well. The Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association was working closely with the licensing in both Minneapolis and St. Paul regarding this issue. There was questions about if it was necessary to have the state weigh in. And we decided for the old belt and suspenders values that we like to make it as clear as possible that we would move forward with legislation. And Representative Dabney, did you have anything to add to that, to my memory?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding as well. I've been in contact with the city of Minneapolis. They initially thought that they could modify things under authority they already have. They're comfortable with this and are also working with the affected liquor stores, I think, to be as flexible as they can be in helping them move forward.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No further, more further questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions, members?
Representative Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, to the Krause family, thank you for your commitment to rebuilding in the community. I know it's not an easy decision, but I'm very happy to hear that, and I hope that we can, as legislators, that you will continue to work with Representative Dabney. I know he's a strong advocate for the area he represents, and if there's other tools or resources that you need, obstacles or barriers to progress that are achieving, please stay in touch with Representative Dabney. I know he does a really good job of representing people there. So just thank you for your commitment. And then I wanted to also share that, like the Chair Halverson, I too made my way through college with an alcohol tie-in, but I didn't work at a liquor store. I bought the stuff. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
You can go ahead and thank Representative Garofalo for funding your college education right now if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo, for your support. Additional questions or comments? Hearing none and seeing none, Representative Dabney, did you have a final word on your bill?
Madam Chair, again, thank you, members, thank you. Apparently, it's all about a willing buyer and a willing seller. And we would like to support this flexibility to allow these stores to play their part in that equation. I appreciate the time tonight, and I'd appreciate support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And members, just before we vote, I will have Simon just confirm our attendance so that everybody is comfortable with the quorum and the vote. Is that acceptable to you, Representative O'Driscoll?
That'll work, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for your flexibility. Simon, do you want to take our roll quickly, please?
Chair Halverson.
Here.
Vice Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Here.
Representative Davids. Representative Dean.
Here.
Sorry, did I hear Davids is here?
Davids here.
Got it.
And Dean is here too.
Yes. Representative Elkins. Here. Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Here.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Present.
Representative Creshaw.
Here.
Representative Lesh.
Present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Mahoney.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Here.
Representative Richardson. Representative Swadzinski.
Here.
Representative Tabke. He's just joining the meeting now, but he's here. Representative Tice.
Here.
Looks like everybody's here except for Representative Richardson, so a quorum is present.
A quorum is present. Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for your flexibility in that. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 133 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Oh, aye. 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 Let's roll call it, folks. Sorry.
Right. Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Cotizza-Watoon.
Yes.
Representative Crenshaw. Representative.
Yes.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Representative Mahoney. Representative O'Neill.
Yes.
Representative Richardson. Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
And then again, Representative Stevenson. Representative Mahoney. And Representative Richardson.
Representative Mahoney, you are muted if you're trying to vote.
Representative Mahoney votes aye.
Got it. Thank you. And I just sent you the tally, Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Simon. There being 18 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and House File 133 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Davney, for your leadership. You're in all of our hearts right now in your community and your neighborhood.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Yes, the Krause family, just want to echo our appreciation for your dedication to the community and we look forward to visiting you in your rebuilt business.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your support and thank you to Representative Davney and all of you for passing this legislation. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a good
evening. Thank you all. Appreciate it, members. Good night.
Thanks, Representative Davney. Okay, members. Next bill on our agenda is House File 84, Representative Dean. And you may move your bill. And we're going to send it to Ways and Means, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 84, I would make the motion that we move this onto Ways and Means and re-refer it to Ways and Means. And if you'd like, I can explain a little bit. I know we have a couple of amendments as well as a couple testifiers.
Very good. So Representative Dean moves that House File 84 be re-referred to Ways and Means. And how would you like to deal with the amendments? Would you like to do them first or would you like to explain your bill?
I'll explain the bill a little bit, and if folks have questions after testimony, we can certainly go into those. House File 84 is a bill that really is related to the impacts of businesses throughout the areas that have been devastated. And I'm sorry that Dean Rose wasn't able to join us. His store is in my district, just a few blocks from where I live. And that's a new store that was rebuilt after the tornado from 9 years ago. So it's been pretty tough, but I get the feeling that he's committed to rebuilding and staying in our the district as well. So what House File 84 does is it instructs the Department of Commerce to work with all those businesses throughout impacted areas in dealing with insurance claims and some of the things necessary. It also then has a reporting component for insurance companies regarding those individuals who have either been denied coverage, rejected, or if they've yet to be fulfilled, just so we can sort of track how things are happening with those businesses along the corridor. So it's not a super complicated bill. You know, it requires the Department of Commerce to to sort of pitch in and be an ally for all of these businesses, as well as it has the insurance companies participating in a way and monitoring, so we know what's going on. As Representative Dabney mentioned, the extent of damage is fairly significant. Those events just over 3 weeks ago, I think, have sort of changed us all. And as we look at these different corridors and these different businesses throughout the city, because, you know, when you look at the north side, the impacts are pretty significant around West Broadway, but also there are a lot of other impacts throughout North Minneapolis, because our community has many sort of what I would say are intersection business nodes of 3, 4, 5 businesses or so that are impacted, but we don't see them on the news. We don't see that just because the scale of damage, albeit significant for those individuals, it is not quite as dramatic as it is in other areas. So with that, I would like to move the amendment, the A2 amendment. And this is an amendment that we've made some changes relative to.
And Representative Dean and perhaps House Research could help us with this in terms of the orders of the amendment, because I want to be sure. I know that there's also an A1 amendment, and based on how they're drafted, I don't know if we have to take them in a particular order, because I don't know if A1 is drafted to your amended bill. So House Research, did you have guidance on that for us and which amendment to take first?
Chair and representatives.
Ms. Banco, yes, thank you.
Hello. The A2 amendment works as drafted to the bill. The A1 amendment would have to be modified to be added on to the A2 because it's to the original language. Okay. Do you want a suggestion on that?
That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yes.
So I would adopt the A2 amendment, and then I will give some direction as to how to orally modify the A1 amendment to apply to the A2. So,
very good. And Representatives Dean and O'Driscoll, does that plan work for you? They're your two amendments. So,
works for me. Does it work for you, Representative O'Driscoll?
Yeah, Representative Dean, and excuse me, Chair Halverson, Representative Dean, that's fine. We certainly can take the author amendments first, as long as there's a pathway for us to discuss the A1 amendment this evening. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, so Representative Dean has moved the A2 author's amendment. Is there any discussion to the author's amendment? Hearing none, we can do this on a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? No. Hearing no opposition, the amendment is adopted. Shall we deal with the A1 amendment next? And then we can move forward with the bill.
I think that's a great plan, Madam Chair.
Excellent. So, Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move the A1? And then it sounds like we might have to do an oral amendment to that as well.
Madam Chair, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk about the spirit and intent of the A1 amendment, and then maybe we can go to nonpartisan staff for the suggested recommendations on how to deal with some oral incorporations to get it so that the committee can actually consider it as being germane to and appropriate to be considered to the bill. The A1 amendment simply says that if all the insurance companies that may be offering property and casualty coverage, either through a BOP, which for those of you who aren't familiar with the insurance industry, BOP stands for a business owner's policy. And I've always learned, and I will credit Representative Lunan, who used to be with us, for helping me to always remember what a BOP is. He said, a BOP is a policy that's sold to a business that you BOP on into as you're going down the street. And so all of these different carriers who offer these policies, some of them may not have any claims. right, of all the carriers across the state. So all I'm doing is saying, if you haven't had any claims filed, there's no reason for you to submit a blank letter to the state of Minnesota Department of Commerce saying, had no claims and have nothing pending. That it would just basically be, if you were contacted and you did have claims, that you would report the status versus nobody's coming to us for any claims because we don't have property insured or claims that are being made in that area. It's a simple type of an amendment. I think that it helps to manage the department's work with everything that's going on. Certainly will help the insurance companies, and certainly doesn't go looking for extra work for anyone by having it be a an amendment that says, yeah, we don't need to report if we don't have any claims. That's the spirit and intent, Madam Chair. And so if we want to go to nonpartisan staff, maybe to see how to incorporate that for consideration.
That, thank you. Representative Dean, did you have any comments on the discussion of the amendment at this point?
Madam Chair and Representative Driscoll, I've talked to folks at Commerce as well as had a conversation with Mr. Koking from the Insurance Federation, and I think this clears up a lot of what might be confusion about who this all applies to. So I appreciate the amendment put forward by Representative Skoll, and if we can get the oral amendment changed to this so that it fits, happy to support this.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Well, Representative Driscoll, we can ask Ms. Pompuda to give us the helpful direction on how we make this work, if that works for you, and then we can make our motions.
I'm all ears.
Great. Ms. Pompu, can you, we're all looking forward to hearing your solution.
Chair and members, surely. Under the A2 language, insurers must submit information related to claims, policies that weren't renewed, increased rates, and other information by the commissioner. And so if you want to exclude insurers that don't have any of that relevant information to provide, if they would just send a blank letter saying none of this is applicable, I would change it to an oral amendment that says an amendment to the A2 amendment that says page 1, after line 22, insert only an insurer who has relevant information related to businesses affected by the civil unrest during the peacetime emergency must submit information to the commissioner. And so that would limit it to relevant information under those categories. And I can type something up and make sure that the reviser gets that oral change and meets Representative O'Driscoll's intent.
Madam Chair, I like the oral amendment. I am comfortable with having something drafted and getting to the reviser's office, knowing the spirit and intent of what we're looking at. And it does sound like it's a friendly amendment willing to be taken by the bill author. The only question that I have is just for clarification purposes, having relevant information. I want to know if relevant information means no claims. Is that relevant or is that not relevant? I just don't want to have interpretation by regulators saying, well, they didn't have any claims. That's important information to know. So I really want to just be able to exclude them from having to submit anything, even a letter that says, hey, we don't, because that's the purpose of the amendment is to say, if I don't have any claims, I don't need to submit it. So I just want to make sure that we're taking that extra burden off of everybody involved, including the regulator.
Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, that sounds like a great change. We can change relevant to only insurers that have received claims, not renewed policies, increased rates, or have any of the additional information requested by the commissioner. So we can list those items out, but if they don't have any of those four items, then they don't have to submit information to the commissioner.
The only other thing that I would suggest, Madam Chair, is we talk about civil unrest in here. Actually, in policies, they do reference the words riot. So it might not be a bad idea to say riot and civil unrest, since both of those do appear in a number of property casualty policies, just to provide clarification.
Representative Dean, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I'm not. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Schultz. I know that policies have riot. I think there's certain connotations that go along with riot. Personally, I don't know how it would interpreted at the insurance level, and maybe when Mr. Cocking speaks to that, if that's actually a relevant thing to add the term riot into legislation. Just my personal issue, as you know, we look at what has happened in these areas that are devastated, and I want to be really, really careful about the type of language that we're putting in law relative to that.
Madam Chair, I respect Representative Dean's idea and the spirit and intent of what he's looking at, but the policies do identify riot, and so I want to make sure that those who do have claims are actually being able to get a claim covered under their policy through the term riot and civil unrest.
Representative Driscoll, Representative Dean, and members, I think it might be helpful for us to hear from the department and perhaps also hear from the Insurance Federation to this oral amendment and to your question about language, civil unrest and riot, if you're amenable. Is there somebody from the department who would like to provide advice on this proposed amendment? Rep. Commissioner Kelly, welcome to the committee. Nice to see you.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for enabling me to participate in the hearing this evening. For the record, I'm Steve Kelly. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And I want to start by thanking Representative Dean for bringing this legislation forward. The department has been working with the affected businesses, but there's certainly nothing wrong with reinforcing that mission on the part of the department to work with those businesses, the customers of our insurance companies, to make sure that they're being well served by the insurance industry. So we think that that is an important aspect of the bill, even though we weren't waiting. And Madam Chair, I'd like to, if time permits, circle back to the kind of work we have been doing with community members and businesses, but I feel obligated to address the specific question that you raised. And I think Representative O'Driscoll's amendment was drawn to the original bill, which was focused on information regarding claims. We did have a conversation with Representative Dean regarding the bill and suggested that there was some additional information that would be useful. And I think, though I haven't had a chance to see it, I think House Research's proposed oral amendment may be just fine. But one of the things that we were concerned about was not just the companies that were responding to claims, but also some of the aftermath consequences. For example, one of the concerns we have is that businesses that weren't affected and don't currently have claims might be non-renewed by their insurance company because of the area in which they're located, because they were in the potential zone of harm. And we think it's important to know whether that is happening so that we can investigate whether those non-renewals are appropriate. And secondly, we'd also talked about rate increases, and that is in Representative Dean's author's amendment for businesses that weren't affected. So we are interested in rate increases for affected businesses, but also for those that might not have been affected but are in that vicinity. All of that would be useful information, and I heard staff's oral amendment, I think the way they structured that, it would be workable. The only other thing is I understand Representative O'Driscoll's intent to be only limiting the impact of Representative Dean's proposal. The department has broad authority to request information in Chapter 45. And if Representative O'Driscoll were intending his amendment to limit that, then the department would be concerned. But that was not our understanding of the amendment when we learned about it earlier this afternoon. It was just focused on the new language that Representative Dean was offering. So that's my response with respect to the two amendments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I believe the question you asked the commissioner was relative to including the word riot to be able to be more consistent with what the department approves for policy coverages, the terminology. So if the commissioner could simply just address that issue of riots and civil unrest, since they are language that are in policies that they approve for sale here in the state of Minnesota. I'm just wanting to help them to be consistent as well as others to know what the outcome needs to be here.
Well, Commissioner Kelly.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I don't have any objection to the use of the word riot, though we do not oversee the filings for commercial insurance. My understanding is that the forms offered by the ISO do include the word riot. So that does seem appropriate, but use of that term wouldn't affect any regulatory activity on our part.
So thank you, Commissioner. Representative O'Driscoll.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so I would just like to incorporate the word riot along with civil unrest. I think it just provides clarity for everyone. Perhaps even one of those business owners who picks up their policy and reads it and says, well, I've been hearing that riot and civil unrest, they can actually identify that language in their policy. And since policies are to be in plain language in the state of Minnesota, they would get an idea of even perhaps how to file a claim or that they might be eligible for filing a claim.
So Representative O'Driscoll, I also would like to hear the impact from the Insurance Federation, if we can. And then Commissioner Kelly, we will come back around to you to talk about the bill as amended once we deal with this. And in the meantime, I would like to ask Aaron Koking if he would be willing to comment on the question at hand, which is adding the term riot to the amendment.
Yes, good evening. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Aaron Cocking with the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Specifically to Representative O'Driscoll's question, the term riot, and Commissioner Kelly discussed it, is the term that is used in the standard ISO policy. But to get specific, it's actually riot or civil commotion, not civil unrest. So to the extent that we want to model or copy the language that exists in the ISO policy, it would be riot or civil commotion as a specified cause of loss.
And if I may ask, Mr. Cocking, is there anything that would create challenges for insured members in collecting claims? Are there riders that exclude riot? I don't want to put anybody in a situation where we can't make people whole.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I think that's your goal. I think that's our goal.
Right. And I can speak to that now. And that was included in the testimony that I was going to offer the committee as well. But when this activity broke out, we obviously recognized that we were going to get this question as far as whether or not the activity that was taking place would, in fact, be a covered loss. So we had reached out proactively to our member companies to gauge to the extent to which riot or civil commotion would be covered. And the overwhelming response we got back from our members is that, yes, in fact, riot and civil commotion are largely standard in all insurance policies.
Very good. I appreciate that background. Any additional questions for Mr. Cocking? I will listen. And I'm hearing no further questions. And we will come back to you as well for your comments on the bill as amended, but really appreciate you helping us walk through this. I'm just sending a request here to get the language to everybody electronically so that we're all very clear, because I think the discussion has been good and thorough, and we want to be sure that everybody has the same understanding. Representative Dean, do you have a final word on the amendment adding the term riot? And if not, we can have a representative or Ms. Pompeo do the drafting for us here.
Yeah, I would just add that if we're going to be adding the term riot, then we should definitely change the civil unrest to the issue around the commotion that Mr. Copping spoke to, so that the language is, if we're making sure that it's similar to what's in policies, let's have it be similar then.
And Representative O'Driscoll, does this work for you?
It does. And I thank Representative Dean. I think this is a great consumer move, because anyone who's looking at their policy that wants to know who comes across this bill, should it become law, will actually be able to see the language in the statute and be able to go to their policy and be able to determine that they are or are not eligible for filing a claim. I think it's great consumer protection.
Well, thank you very much. And if I can ask Ms. Pompeo to just put those words into writing and send them to Travis Reese. This is very complex, and I apologize. And feel free to ask any questions about intent between Representative Dean and Representative O'Driscoll. It sounds like there's agreement. Doing this virtually is much more clumsy and complicated, but I feel like we all just gave everybody a civics lesson and how we work out amendments. So good work, everybody. Takes a lot of heads in the room to make this a good public policy. So Ms. Pompeo, does that sound, are you agreeable to that plan?
Surely, and I have the language written up for Representative Chair and members. I have the language written up for Representative O'Driscoll's original A1, and that's going to read, only insurers who have received claims, not renewed policy, or increased rates as described in paragraph A must submit information to the commissioner. And so there's that limitation on who must submit. And then there are three different places in the A2 amendment where the term civil unrest is used. And that will be changed to riot and civil commotion. And I'll write that amendment out verbatim and send it on to Travis.
Thank you very much. And members, we can wait for that in writing before we vote, if that is your preference, just so that everybody has clarity. Is that what you would like to do, Representative O'Driscoll?
And Madam Chair, we can do that. I'm happy to do that. And if you'd like to maybe move to other public testimony on the bill that we anticipate will be amended, I think in the last 20 minutes or whatever it's been, people have an idea of what the committee is striving for. And so we may get some support or some opposition to the attempt and the effort. But it's your committee, and I will defer to you.
It's a team effort. Ms. Pompeo will give you a little bit of time to put that together in writing, and a little bit of time for Travis to get it to committee members. And while that takes place, we can take public testimony, starting with Commissioner Kelly. We will welcome you back to the committee. I do want to say at the outset, I know that you are going to address this, but having been out in Minneapolis and St. Paul talking to business owners on the ground, the outreach from your department has been really helpful. They've been very responsive. And I believe today was the first kind of on the ground clinic, on insurance clinic for affected business owners. And so just wanted to thank you for that direct outreach to affected business owners.
And you have the floor, sir. Madam Chair, thank you very much. We appreciate that, and I appreciate our team members who organized that and participated in it, along with our colleagues from Department of Employment and Economic Development and City of Minneapolis and various community groups. So that was indeed a team effort, but we think it is just the beginning of, well, it's not just the beginning, and I will explain a little bit more about what the department has been doing since the events began to unfold. So I've already talked a little bit about the value of Representative Dean's bill with respect to the information gathering and how we deal with the appropriate handling of insurance issues in these affected areas going forward, whether a particular business was affected or not. But going back, as soon as the first cases of damage to businesses were reported, the department created insurance-related disaster response guides. We have such guides for natural disasters, which we've used in the past in responding to floods or tornadoes or similar kinds of events where team members have gone into the field and helped to distribute these guides that assist primarily in those instances, residential customers or insureds who've suffered a loss in how to document their claims and request responses from their insurance company. We adapted those residential-oriented guides to businesses and residents who might have been affected by this type of disaster. And we also made these guides available in English, Spanish, Somali, and Hmong. The department staff proactively sent these guides out to community organizations, neighborhood and business associations, the Minneapolis and St. Paul legislative delegations, mayors and city council members, and Hennepin and Ramsey County commissioners. After sending out that resource, we engaged in conversations with a variety of community organizations and business associations in each of the areas to hear the issues that affected communities and businesses are facing and to keep an eye out for insurance-related issues that might arise. We are coordinating our response efforts with Department of Employment and Economic Development, Revenue, and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to get businesses accurate and timely information in a coordinated way. We're dedicated to hearing directly from business owners. We've had a lot of representatives like you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dabney and others communicate to us about their neighborhoods, but we also want to hear directly about business owners. And last week, Commerce staff participated in a virtual meeting organized by the Midway Chamber of Commerce and then and an in-person meeting held at Plaza Verde for business owners. And as you said earlier today, there was a joint forum hosted by the Neighborhood Development Center at the Midtown Global Market. We continue to work with representatives and senators like Representative Dean and Senator Champion, community and business leaders in the city of Minneapolis to make sure that we host similar events in North Minneapolis and in St. Paul. We're also working with organizations that serve immigrant small business owners to hold information and listening sessions in Spanish and continue to find partners to hear from African and Asian business owners. And in addition to those outreach efforts, the department's Consumer Services Center staff serve as the department's front door for consumer questions or concerns, and they're ready to help businesses and individuals navigate their insurance-related issues if people call the Department of Commerce. I relay all of these efforts to you not only to emphasize the range of assistance that we can provide, but also to highlight that even through this engagement with individual business owners, we are still only seeing a small portion of what's happening to policyholders. And collecting data will help us understand better the full context of how the insurance industry is responding to this crisis and inform you and other policymakers about any future responses that are needed. We understand our role in this bill is helping Minnesotans with their questions, ensuring that they are receiving timely resolutions regarding their claims and not forcing a particular outcome on a claim. I also note that we read the language on line 1.10 as directing the agency to provide information to the public about how to submit claims and navigate the claims process generally. I want to thank again Representative Dean and Representative O'Driscoll for working on this and giving us the opportunity to highlight our response efforts and the ways in which we're available to assist businesses. I'm encouraged to see the legislature and the administration are thinking similarly in regards to the response that's needed in this situation. I'm happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
There.
There you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Senator Kelly, excuse me, Commissioner Kelly, first question, you were talking about the different forums that you were having. Have you done proactive outreach to the industry, to the carriers, to invite them to participate in these, to explain to constituents, the people of the state of Minnesota, their customer base, how they can apply for coverage, who to contact, what that process would be, again, in the way of trying to help consumers to settle their losses and their needs.
Commissioner Kelly.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, our outreach to the industry has taken a couple forms. Not long after it became clear the extent of the damages in the areas affected by the riot and civil commotion, I contacted Mr. Cocking to talk about what the insurance industry's response would be. And then we also held a meeting with board members, a virtual meeting of board members representing the Insurance Agents Association. And we helped to recruit an insurance agent to participate in the forum this afternoon so that the community members who attended that forum could hear directly from an insurance agent about the best ways to submit a claim and issues to watch out for. So we have been working closely with both insurance companies and with insurance agents to make sure that this response is as complete as possible.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Kelly, again, my question was, did you reach out to the companies? Agents are just that, agents of the company. They're not employees. They don't speak specifically for the company. They are licensed by you to have company appointments with those particular carriers. Have you reached out to the companies to have them come out in a position of authority to speak on behalf of the man-made disaster that occurred and how they plan on helping to take care of their policyholders and customers?
Commissioner Kelly.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I have not contacted individual companies regarding this. I spoke with Mr. Cocking.
Representative O'Driscoll,
okay.
We're going to hear from Mr. Cocking as well. So,
okay. Madam Chair, I want to also ask the Commissioner why this particular piece of legislation is needed at this time. We've had other situations where there have been pockets of areas that have had substantial losses. St. Peter with the tornadoes, other areas. Why, as a matter of fact, I remembered early on in my legislative career that a certain portion of Minneapolis was hit by tornadoes and the like. There didn't seem to be the pressing need to have additional legislation to make sure that folks are reporting and who the claims are and their claim status and what the status is on those kinds of things. Is that because those are natural disasters versus man-made disasters, or maybe the commissioner can speak to where the deficiencies are in state law right now or in his department's inability to request this information in a man-made versus other situations?
And I'll ask the commissioner to comment, and perhaps Representative Dean would like to as well, because he is also familiar with the action after the North Minneapolis tornadoes. So, Commissioner Kelly.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, as I said earlier, Chapter 45 gives the department broad authority to request information from insurance companies. And as I also said, we did not wait for legislative direction in order to work closely with affected businesses. However, I think it's also important, and I recall from my time in the legislature, that it can be extremely useful for the legislature to communicate to constituents and to Minnesotans that the state is on the side of the community in addressing these concerns. So I won't get into the question of need. I think that's really for the legislature to decide. But I do understand the value of Representative Dean's effort here to communicate to areas affected by these activities, that the legislature is concerned and is applying the various resources that the state has to address the problems that these businesses experienced.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Driscoll. I think that, you know, this is a unique set of events that occurred over the past few weeks. And, you know, one thing that I think is very different with this from typical, what I would say are natural disasters, as I've mentioned in the past. I mean, my house was hit in 2011 by the tornado. So, I mean, that was huge trauma for many of us. And in an odd way, there's some similarities to a tornado, because on one block, you'll see areas completely destroyed, and you go a block away and nothing happens. So I think what makes this unique, though, is not just the number of businesses and landowners, but also the wide range of them. You know, we know we're going to have many, many small businesses, some that started maybe 6 months ago, some that maybe have been around for a long time. We know that there are a lot of individuals that English is not their first language. And I think that this is one of those areas in which we as government need to step up to make sure that our constituents and those business owners have the opportunities to, you know, reestablish and put back what they put their sort of their hard work and their money and their blood, sweat, and tears over all these years. And ultimately, my biggest concern is this, is trying to minimize the number of people that fall through the cracks. I think that, you know, given the extent of damage, I think there could be quite a few people that fall through the cracks. And as you probably know, Representative O'Driscoll and other members on this committee, you know, that some people reach a level of frustration sometimes when they're dealing with things, and they sort of give up. And I don't want to see that happening for any of these individuals and businesses that have impacted. So that's why I think it's important that we have it. And I'm glad that Mr. Cocking is here, and that it sounds like the Department of Commerce and the Insurance Federation will create a partnership to make sure that we're covering all those individuals that need to be covered.
Madam Chair.
Senator O'Driscoll.
Representative Dean, I concur with your assessment, but I would also say that those business owners, some of them who maybe have been business owners for 6 months, or English as a second language, or first-generation immigrants to this country, also have at night to go home to a home where they're still that same person who's had a business for 6 months, or English as a second language, or first-generation immigrants. And so in natural disasters versus man-made disasters, they still would be experiencing those same kinds of disadvantages. And I just find it kind of interesting that we weren't looking at those kinds of remedies or that additional heightened awareness anywhere else in the state and other events other than today. I am not impugning motives, not in the least, not in the least. I just find it interesting.
Madam Chair and Representative, I would just say that it would have been nice. We tried really, really hard to get people the assistance they needed in dealing with insurance companies. And looking back on 2011, I think the North Minneapolis community could have used the Department of Commerce coming in and doing these types of forums and other events for those individuals that were impacted.
Madam Chair, final comment on this. Representative Dean, as the commissioner's own admission and a couple times tonight, they do have the authority to be able to do this. If they choose not to take the initiative, that's nothing that the legislature can do, because that's the executive branch, and we certainly have a division of powers here in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next on the agenda, we will be hearing from Aaron Cocking of the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee again. You can just restate your name, please, for the record.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Aaron Cocking with the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. As I believe most on the committee are aware, the Insurance Federation represents the property casualty industry in Minnesota, and my member companies collectively write about 75% of that business by premium volume. when the riots and civil commotion broke out in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I, along with other Minnesotans, watched as arsonists set fires to local businesses. And it quickly became clear that my members would be adjusting and paying a significant number of claims for property loss from these acts. And in anticipation of coverage questions, as I mentioned earlier, we reached out to our members to determine the coverage issues. Specifically, do most policies cover this type of loss? And as I said, we heard back from our members that these losses would mostly be paid as covered losses because rioting, looting, and civil commotion are specifically included perils in almost all standard homeowners, auto, and commercial insurance policies. On June 2nd, we at the Insurance Federation sent out a press release announcing that our industry stood ready to help people start the process of rebuilding their lives, as well as giving helpful tips on the next step policyholders should take. We specifically included media in areas hardest hit. Furthermore, after speaking with Commerce Commissioner Kelly, as he mentioned, and hearing feedback from the department, we reached out to our members and asked them to use more lenient tools in the claim handling process. We recognized that, number one, claims like this would normally require a police report to be filed as part of the claims process. Obviously, law enforcement was focused elsewhere during these times and could not come to fill out this paperwork. But second, several of these business owners, for obvious reasons, would not feel comfortable calling the police to file a report. Insurance companies, as I believe most of you are aware, are experienced in taking care of our policyholders in times of highly charged emotion. Oftentimes, after a fire or storm, people are understandably emotional about what has just happened. And while this specific catastrophe is different than that of a tornado or a hurricane, our companies are still very prepared and ready to handle these claims. On House File 84 specifically, this bill seems to imply that there are going to be a large number of disputed claims. As I just noted, in almost all cases of rioting, looting, and vandalism, these claims are in fact covered losses. The bill seems redundant, as there is already a complaint process in place for claimants if they disagree with their insurer. Additionally, this bill adds an unnecessary administrative burden to insurance companies, largely born out of the distrust that we will handle claims appropriately when there's no evidence whatsoever that there will be problems in the claims handling process. Our reading of this bill does not seem to contain anything that the Department of Commerce can't already do by way of data calls if they thought necessary. As I mentioned previously, we have an Unfair Claim Settlement Practices Act that provides an avenue for policyholders who feel unfairly treated by an insurer. To that end, we are very early on in the claims filing process. As I mentioned earlier, we have and are encouraging people to file claims with their agent or with their company. One specific technical item that I would point out with this bill, we touched on, and Representative O'Driscoll's amendment picked up one of the issues, but the other one is the term rejected or yet to fulfill, as laid out in this bill, are undefined terms in insurance parlance. The word rejected should probably be replaced with denied, and yet to fulfill be replaced with open claims or pending. I believe Representative Dean that those terms would certainly encapsulate what your intent are. I want to thank Representative Dean for calling me this morning to talk about this bill. It was helpful to gain some insight into his thinking. As I mentioned to him, and I'll reiterate to the committee, the IFM and our member companies are working hard to assist individuals and businesses in getting back on their feet, and we stand ready to be able to assist in that. But we do believe that this bill is completely unnecessary to achieving that objective. Thank you, Madam Chair. And as always, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Members, questions? You may just ask for recognition by voice. I'm hearing no questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. To clarify a couple things from Representative O'Driscoll's questions, so the process went as such that folks reached out to you, the commissioner and others reached out to you, and you reached out to your member organizations I know that we've had those kinds of connections before, because you're the one on call representing the insurance industry day or night, as they
That's
say.
Right. Yes, had a productive conversation with the commissioner. We appreciated his willingness after we sent out our notice to folks for his follow-up and being able to work and to pass the concerns that he had from the department or what they'd been hearing from business owners along, obviously, broadly to our members.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. And then regarding redundancy, I certainly I hear you. I will say that I have been with a number of these business owners pretty frequently. And I think that, you know, we are living in an age of, they are living in an age of chaos right now and trauma. And I think that there is a certain amount of comfort, I think, that comes with knowing that the protections are there and that we are all working together to make sure that this really thriving economic area of our state is able to rebuild. We, you know, none of us want to walk away and see, you know, Minnehaha Liquors not rebuild and see big holes in the ground. This is a pretty, you know, well, I have always said we all love our districts very much, and I know that the representatives of this district are working hard and really feeling the heart of the community and the pain that's out there. So I hear what you have to say, and this is a time where I think we're all looking for extra measures of comfort.
I agree, and I just want to reiterate, Madam Chair, and to the members and to the members whose districts specifically have been hurt by this, you know, happy to come on site if they've got businesses that have questions. I reiterate that we stand ready to provide assistance in whatever way possible, and to reach out to me directly because we're ready to help.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. So members, we have the piece of business to take care of with regard to the amendment. Everybody has the oral amendment that Representative O'Driscoll is proposing in their email box now. Normally, we wouldn't have to do that, but I just, for everybody's comfort and clarity, I wanted to take that extra step and make sure that we all had it in front of us so that it was very clear the way we were amending the bill. So Representative O'Driscoll, this is your amendment, and you have, we might just entertain a motion to move what is written so that we have the motion and the vote very clear. Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I think the appropriate motion by me at this time would be to do the oral amendment, which is actually a quasi-written amendment via email to my A1 amendment, which was modified because of the Dean amendment. I guess I would ask nonpartisan staff what the actual motion should be, because we have a couple of things paralleling one another here.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Ms. Pampu, you have the floor again. We're looking for your advice.
She got us into this.
Chair and members, I would just ignore the A1 amendment. I would make this an oral amendment to the A2 amendment. And so it's written to just be put on to the A2 amendment.
So, Madam Chair, procedurally, since the A2 is now a part of the bill, we can just move this as an amendment to the bill as amended. Am I correct?
I believe so, Ms. Pampu.
Chair and members, sounds good to me.
Excellent.
Can I move the amendment? And I don't know that we necessarily have a number, but we know what the spirit and intent of this is. Perhaps there's an oral amendment that has written documentation to the to the bill as amended.
Excellent. Representative Dean?
I'm good. Let's go with the vote on the amendment.
Excellent. Well, members, we can do this vote by voice vote. All those in favor of Representative O'Driscoll's oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Thank you very much, everybody, for going through that a little bit more procedurally heavy exercise with this amendment. I just wanted to be sure that we did it right and that intent and words were very clear. Ms. Pompeo, thank you for walking us through that. It's tough to do online and much easier to work together in the same room. So looking forward to getting to be in the same room with everybody again. With that, any final words on House File 84 as amended?
Madam Chair, I'll just say that I think this is an effort, and I'm not going to challenge Mr. Cocking on whether or not this is necessary. I think this is one of those things when people are doing what is the right thing to do, and there's someone else assisting him in making sure that they're doing what's right, we still end up with what's right. And I know we have one more stop at Ways and Means, so I'll take Mr. Cocking's recommendation about language relative to denial and pending versus the current words we have of rejection and that. I don't have the bill directly in front of me, but so make those changes so that it aligns, because I think we're trying to be consistent with what the industry uses to make sure that there's no question for those individuals that are policyholders as well as those insurers as well. So I just appreciate everybody's time this evening and would ask for your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Dean and members. With that, Representative Dean renews his motion that House File 84 as amended be re-referred to Ways and Means. Simon, will you please take the roll? Mr. Brown, my apologies. Mr. Brown, would you please take the roll?
That's Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins. Representative Elkins, didn't hear that.
Aye.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo. Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Howard.
Aye.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Representative Creshaw.
Aye.
Representative Lesh. Representative Liz Ligard.
Aye.
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Richardson. Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
And just to ask the ones I didn't hear, Representative Lesh?
Aye.
And Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo's aye.
All right, there being 18 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails, and House File 84 as amended is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Dean, and thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, members. There is no other business before our committee for the evening. So with that, members, we are adjourned.